This week on RSPB Update, the annual survey has been released and we run through all the details. We highlight our favorites and question what's to come in 2020 and beyond. We also recap the live stream press conference and its highlights, and then we end on a bombshell reveal. This is RSPB Update, episode 739, recorded Friday, August 30th, 2019. The Cambridge Mob. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, it's Summer Survey Week, month ahead, September. We're recording this on Friday because we thought, hey, why wait till next week to talk about what's coming out on Friday, especially when they're so big and consequential. And to do that, Tanis is here, as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And also joining us this week to talk about the survey and many other things is Sirion. Welcome back to you as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. So, you know, Patch Week again, but also announcing the return of the September raffle, Balthazar Bogard. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. His spectacular circus have had a dip in funds this year, so once again, they're hosting a raffle. Every day in September, get a free ticket.
Is that because people don't do the circus anymore?
I think you may have hit upon a sad realization. Because a circus is definitely mid-level content, and I haven't gone back there in years. But in any case, as with previous years, you earn more free tickets by completing a daily challenge and tracking down Jelly Willikers, the traveling clown. Boy, I hate tracking down that clown. That's part I like the least.
I hate the clown, period.
Yeah, okay. Back in my nation state at nationstates.net, I actually once instituted a policy that lets people shoot clowns for fun.
Of course you did.
But anyways, that's a bit of a sidetrack on this. Nationstates.net, a fun game. It's been pick of the week a couple times before. But nonetheless, this year the prizes are pretty much the same as they were last year, with golden god swords, portable deposit boxes, golden war priest armor, death touch darts, golden barrows equipment, golden chaotic equipment, protein packs. And this year new is the golden version of Linza the Disgraced barrows equipment. But there is one new mechanic this year with this. If you miss a day, or several, you'll be able to give Balthazar a bond, and he'll hand over all of the tickets that you missed previously. And as a bonus, he'll hold on to any tickets that you might miss in the future. How do we feel about this bond mechanic?
Rigged. It's rigging it. It's rigged, man.
You know,
I don't know how it's rigged.
I was hoping someone could explain that to me, how exactly you can rig a raffle,
dude,
when there's thousands of people playing.
I would love to explain that one to you, but I don't know.
Does this fit under the realm of RuneScape conspiracy theories that you'd find on the...
This is just dumb. I can't. This is like Alex Jones territory. I can't defend it. It's dumb.
I mean, the fact that you pick up more, like people might pick up their tickets later on, it means the tickets are in play at different stages of the month.
Yeah.
But I don't see how it changes, except for it might bring some more tickets into the game, because people could always hold on to the tickets already anyway.
And you could always get them from challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Jilly Willikers. And we know what the schedule is for when they're going to be giving these out on each of the different days. It's not like it's random each day. There's a set date as to when each prize is given out. And, you know, to just consider the amount of people playing RS3, you would need to be controlling hundreds, if not thousands, of accounts to have a noticeable impact in the amount of prizes.
Yeah, I don't think it will make a material impact.
I don't know. I think it's the Cambridge Mob. You know, they're rigging it. They got operatives and Jagex, you know.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
But seriously, like anything that is helping use up bonds is good. You want that market to be strong, and as many uses as you have for them, the better.
Yeah.
It's not.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's not a new mechanic either. Like we saw, like when you go think back, the summer beach parties had these treasure maps, and every day you would log in, you would like dig at a certain location, but you can only dig on a certain day and a certain like time. So you could pay a bond to unlock all the other locations. Yeah. Like that, this mechanic has existed since 2016, which is when the beach first came out.
And so, there's nothing new here.
No, exactly. The only thing that's new is that it's applied to a raffle, which is sure it's slightly different, but given how many people play, the impact will not be significant, I think. Yeah. So it's just a good bond sync, and I agree with Tanis. Like every way that syncs bonds into things is good, because that needs to be a market with supply and demand. You know, especially outside of the Premier Club selling periods, which is
important. You know what I'd like to see, just as the final point on this, and it's not raffle related, but it's media related. I would like to see somebody take up the mantle and become the RuneScape Alex Jones, who goes through all these conspiracy theories and either peddles them or debunks them.
Well, there'd be a lot to peddle.
Yeah, there certainly are. Anyways, I just got a kick out of that. We're going to move on to patch notes right now. I want to just make a quick comment about the patch notes before we begin this week. And I'd be interested to hear your guys' opinion on this. The hot fixes and cold fixes for the problems with the sigil rework from the week before were in this week's patch notes.
Once again, Shane, it reminds me of last week where I said, don't piss down my leg and tell me it's raining. that already happened. Those are not patch notes.
And you like, think it would make sense to move beyond that to happier and brighter horizons.
Wouldn't you? Oh, no. Let's point out our big screw up that we made. Draw more attention to it.
Anyways.
I still think it's important to mention the fixes you made, but because like the patch notes are sort of that record, but mention them separately, as in like last week's hot fixes.
Last week's hot fixes. Last week's cold fixes.
That would have been more acceptable, yeah.
Last week's 0 day fixes.
Yeah, something like that. Like I have no problem with that, but like keep them separate so that people can actually see what's new.
Because you read these in line, you think they all came into the game this week.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Is going on? These are coming in this week, and the update comes in next week on Sunday. Okay. What the hell is going on here? Wait, we've got a time loop? Is this an episode of Star Trek? What's going on, Shane?
We'll talk about that in the survey, because there was one thing that really irked me about the survey, and it deals with time. Anyways, the mobile perk now correctly lowers the cooldown of the barge ability. Okay. I didn't know that was broken, but sure. This is a big one for boss hunters in particular, those who go to Solak. Aerithor's Grimoire will no longer degrade while you're in the Solak arena, which means that you get to use the Grimoire and its accompanying pages for free effectively there. Which, I mean, I guess this is a buff to Solak, but I don't know if it was needed to encourage more people to fight it for the challenge, perhaps. I don't know. And just a recap of what the Grimoire does. When active, every hit has a 12% chance to be forced to become a critical hit, and this stacks with the Biting perk for an 18% forced critical hit chance. Additionally, it increases your damage cap to 15,000 for critical hits, up from 12,000. So, makes it, I guess, if you're dealing high damage, makes it just easier and freer to do that at Solak. I can imagine David using this when he goes to kill Solak. I don't know if it will encourage people to go fight the boss even more than they are right now.
I don't know. I mean, let's just be thankful Solak ain't a skill, or that would have went the other way.
Ouch, that's too real.
It is, isn't it?
Damage received when playing Pyramid Plunder has been changed to feel more in line with EOC.
So is it, Plunder didn't feel like EOC.
I guess this was a damage buff. Because previously it would have been dealing too little.
Yeah, it did so little damage it wasn't negligible, so they just fixed that.
I thought it was just supposed to annoy you and like get you out of your
No.
It's actually supposed to be dangerous.
Yeah, it's actually supposed to have a chance to kill you there. You used to have to bring food there pre-EOC. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, for real?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right.
Trim Masterwork Armor is now correctly dropped to a peak air when holding players are killed in the wilderness. So that was supposed to be the designed effect, but that wasn't happening. Once again, talk about who goes into the wilderness and PvP.
And in Trim Masterwork.
Yeah. And now, of course, I highlighted the changes from last week's Sigil rework just to make point of them, but they are here in the patch notes for anybody who wants to read them at the very bottom of the combat section of the patch notes. Skilling related, enriched curse memories now give the correct XP at level 90. Sentinel fragments and strange rocks can now be gained from bloodwood trees. Interesting that that couldn't have happened before on that front. Interesting note on Sentinel Fragments. I was chatting with Earth earlier this week. He reached max Sentinel Fragments and was unable to create the outfit after, even though he had all the Sentinel Fragments needed. So there's probably a bit of a bug there. We reported that, but since we're talking about
Sentinel... Do you have the invention level?
Hmm? Yes. Yes, he does. And he discovered the blueprints as well.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and, and they weren't showing up in the manufacturer list.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he doesn't have all of them in Diango's, so seemed like a bug to me. Cooking gauntlets now show up as part of the sous chef set bonus tooltip, so you don't have to break the 6% XP boost if you want to wear your cooking gauntlets. I don't know. I enjoy cooking. It's just one of those simple RS skills. I don't think it is ever going to need a rework, though I might be wrong on that. We'll talk more about that in the survey. There was actually a section on that. You'll gain Herbalar XP when using a Divine Herb patch with the Master Farmer outfit.
Ouch.
Yep. And, you know, for anybody wondering what this is, the Master Farmer outfit allows you to clean the herbs as you get them. So if you were pulling from a Divine Herb patch, you were not getting that XP. And anybody who's done their Divine Locations knows how much XP you can bring in with this.
Mm-hmm.
So. Wow. Rocktail and Sailfish soups will now fill cooking urns. They didn't previously. Which I assume that was just a bug. Mm. It can't have been that way since the very beginning. A whole boatload of typos have been fixed as well. I'm not going to go through the majority of these because some of them are Americanizations. Some of them are just various typos here and there. So you guys can read through the patch notes if you want to see what they were. The advanced mode help button on the character creation screen no longer switches you to the previous mode if you decline choosing an advanced mode before pressing it. And for anybody wondering, advanced mode, of course, refers to the selection of either Iron Man or Hardcore Iron Man. And, you know, this is the bug that, you know, you and I and everybody else who plays, we're not going to notice because we don't create new characters every day. So, good this one has been fixed. The Easter music track no longer plays at the Lumbridge Crater.
Aww.
Added a toggle for the quest point cape in the retro skill cape section of the gameplay and miscellaneous settings. Previously, you would have to, I guess, talk to the wise old man for this one, whereas all the other ones can now be toggled in the settings. Crystal Implings no longer fly through blocked map tiles in Prif, fixing the issues players had near the crew's farm patch.
Oh, could you imagine seeing a crystal you couldn't get it?
You know, thankfully I've only seen one or two of those and actually caught the first one I saw.
I got extremely lucky myself, but I couldn't imagine hunting it.
Yeah, I'd imagine those are quite difficult for you given their small footprints and how they blend in.
Oh, my Lord, yes. I had lots of people helping to look.
All right. And finally, guesting clan members will now display correctly in the clan chat list if you're a member of the clan. And there's patch notes this week, everyone.
All right, well, that's our show this week. We'll be back next week with no updates. Oh, wait, did I say that? Oops. Say that out loud. My bad.
Well, we do have other things we can talk about as well this week, including, of course, the conclusion of the Clan Cup. In total, there were 1,633 submissions with 232 clans competing. And first place was Efficiency Experts with 242. Summit was in second with 237. And the Order of War came in third with 233. And, you know, this is where the drama started happening, because Summit originally had a score of 253, which was marked down as 247 in the last update prior to the final update. But the top score of 253 had 8 top 10 sessions with 1 idle buff used, meaning that they had to deduct points off of this. So as a result, Summit would have been in first if they hadn't caught this idle buff, but Efficiency Experts was put into first because of this. And it's also worth noting, and I think I need to extend a huge congratulations and well done to everybody in Clan Quest. We came in seventh with 215. So congratulations to everybody who competed. You guys did a great job. I am thoroughly and very proud of you. And I'd also like to issue a special thank you to Questscaping for spearheading the effort on our big game hunting push. It turned out quite well, didn't it, Sirion?
Yeah, I think, like, looking at sort of the top clans and, like, Efficiency Expert and Summit, and, I mean, their names speak for themselves as to what they're about, and in their attitude and the drama at the results speak to what they're about. And I think those clans really were about, you know, maximizing everything and really trying to get... It wouldn't surprise me if they really just after the 12% XP boost.
Yeah.
Like, that would not surprise me.
Yeah.
Whereas in Clan Quest, people were just having a boatload of fun doing this.
And we got seventh doing that.
Yeah, like, people were... Like, it started off a bit slow, but people were actually really enjoying it and doing it and working together.
And we got up to fourth on one of the days, too. So,
yeah, well, most... Like, we were in fourth for a really long time. It was only towards the weekend that we started dropping. I say we. I didn't contribute one thing except for adding the sessions to the notice board. But, I think... It's, like, I think it's an attitude thing.
If it were me... They made the complete right decision in doing this. If it were me, I would have completely disqualified Summit.
Yeah, in a way, it was really clear that this was meant to be a fair and equal playing ground. It was really supposed to be about
skill.
That's
how it was designed.
That's how it was designed to be. And if you then go out of your way to find ways around that, you'd... At that point, you know you're on dangerous ground. So, I mean, I think pushing them to the second spot is fair. I mean, it's not like you're not getting anything, right? You're still getting the 9%. You're still getting the avatar. What is
this
really about?
It's worth it on its own.
And yeah, like we said, we had fun doing it on our own. I don't really get it. I support the decision in the end. I mean, it wasn't maybe handled in the best way. And I think they should have maybe left out some of the intermediate updates towards the end.
Yeah.
Which I think caused a lot of drama.
Yeah.
Because people were making assumptions and all that stuff. But other than that, you know, yeah, I agree. If you go out of your way to sort of go around the whole intention and idea and philosophy of this competition, and you know you're not doing the right thing, and you know the response, they all act innocent and like they didn't know, but
You damn well did.
So what was the idol buff? Because I thought they made it so that no buffs and this and that were going to be.
So the idol buff, usable. I don't know what it did, but basically it was overlooked as a buff, and it allowed you to. Was it like faster chopping?
Yeah,
or something
it was faster
for the
chopping
30,
of wood.
Faster chopping for the first 30 minutes of the session, and it was actually quite significant. So they did the math and they figured out like about 2 is the extra kills you could do because of
and
the buff.
Also it gives you a chance at double logs too.
Mm. So yeah, they figured they would sort of compensate for it. People using it.
Yeah, and you know,
if 8 out of 10 entries in your clan used it, it's not even like an accident where you accidentally
disqualified.
Have the buff active.
That's why I said they should have disqualified the whole thing.
I think it's fair to do it like this. I think disqualify is probably too harsh. Let's keep things friendly.
Okay.
Right?
Well, I'm just saying because back in the day, I did run a couple of PvP tournaments in Star Trek Online, and we found people were sneaking in items that they weren't supposed to, and we just totally ejected them from the competition. We had effectively a zero tolerance policy for it. But I can see in a friendly event that you want to be a bit more friendly and extend that olive branch.
Well, and I think this was fine too because honestly. This one must have. This got past Jagex and it shouldn't have.
Yeah, right?
They took the time to make sure none of the other stuff worked.
I think Jagex would have been fine if they just said we did our best.
Yeah.
But if you try and go around it, they shouldn't spend weeks trying to build this system, right? They should say we got rid of the most obvious things, but if we catch you going around it, that's reason that we might disqualify you. So if you're not sure about a buff, whatever buff is allowed, just ask.
Yeah.
Like that, they could have set that up front and everybody would have been the better for it.
Yeah. And, I think overall, this was a really successful event. It was successful because it got clans together, got clan quests together. It brought people to the new piece of content, Anachronia. And it also showed that, you don't need to have a huge, long slugfest for a competition like Clan Cups have been in the past before, or skilling competitions have been in the past before, that they can be limited and still be very fun and very rewarding.
Yeah, sometimes you can wipe out half of the competitors in a half an hour game with, Invisible Mist. Sometimes you can do that too.
Oh... Dimension of Disaster, or Dimension of the Damned, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, a disaster it definitely was.
This reminded me of that all of a sudden. I'm like, actually.
These things happen, and I think the only way for this to happen less is for Jagex to just get more experience in doing these events.
Yeah.
And I think they're well-received.
I think
people like them, and... had this been probably anything other than Big Game Hunter, I might have even given it a try, but that's not my thing, so I couldn't. I think it's kind of funny to me that Efficiency Experts did win because they wasted so much XP during those sessions. It probably killed them to have to do this, but that boost was too good to not get in the long run, so they kind of had to try, So that's kind of funny.
Oh yeah. All right. Anything you guys think they could improve on for next time?
We already touched upon the points. I like the updates they gave throughout to keep sort of. I think it keeps the competition going as well, and it sort of knows how well you're doing. Because otherwise, you don't know what a good score is. But towards the end, when things got a bit iffy with the bonuses, that's when they should. Hold off on the updates and decide first what they want to do before sort of setting false expectations.
Yeah.
Makes
sense.
Otherwise, I think it was handled fine, and I think it worked really well.
Alrighty. Taiko was very pleased about this, and he wanted to talk about this week, so he's included a section in the show notes that everybody can read if they want to. But I think we can move on to the dev Q&A from this week. How'd you guys feel about this? Did you guys take anything interesting away from this? Or?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, not really.
All right. I actually pulled some interesting things out of this, believe it or not.
Where?
Well, let's dive into this. First thing I want to say with this is that they handled the part about the departures at Jagex really well, I think, because that was something that they definitely needed to handle based on what the community had been talking about for what had been days at that point, right?
Well, yeah, because you know they didn't quit, right? They were actually kidnapped by the Cambridge mob because they were going to blow the whistle on the whole raffle rigging situation. That's what really happened.
I think the only thing you're missing are some gay frogs. Anyways, all right. So, yeah, they talked about departures at Jagex after introducing Maud Dorn, one of the German localization team members. They said, you know, we can't go into details. Jagex is a company of 400 people. Departures are going to happen. It's never nice. We don't want to see people leave. It was a coincidence that it happened twice in 1 week. The roles will be backfilled, and they're looking at people who can, who are within the company who can bring more to the mobile table and bolster the teams that had the departures as much as possible. And I think this is answered really well. And
it is also it's super expected, right? Like the tech industry is actually has one of the biggest sort of movement rates for people switching jobs and trying out new things. And I, you know, everybody's like, oh, they quit. Like, some contracts don't get extended because they were temporary contracts. Some people just find another opportunity that they want to try out. Why? Like, Jagex was immediately sort of put down as the bad guy.
Yeah, and we don't need to jump to conspiracy theories with that.
And within, like, in any job, I mean, in any job, I've seen this in my wife's work and you know, just about anywhere. If someone leaves, they might not necessarily bring a new person in. They're just going to have someone else that can actually handle that work and give it to them too. And then they save all that money and round we go. But yeah, no conspiracy, guys. It's a coincidence.
Yeah. They talked about the player-owned farm changes. Nothing is going to be discussed in detail until it's actually signed off on, which is the way it should be. The initial plan isn't happening. They said we can largely discard what we saw before. They looked at the issues that players had, and they put that initial blog out to see if they could get away with that. And as a result, they pulled back, and that was the intended effect all along.
I think that's a bunch of BS, but that's just me.
Well, this is one way to design.
That's a bunch of malarkey.
Is to start harsh and then.
Yes, but they made it sound like, oh, we were never going. I mean, come on, guys. We just wanted you to tell us about it being bad. That doesn't make much sense to me. Why wouldn't you try to, like, do it right and then not have blowback? Because, look, this is a company that has, like, They need to be careful when it comes to their reputation, because things get out of control really easy. And this was something that did get out of control. Like, I don't know. I just think they should be like more careful of that. You know,
it was really communicated as this is what's going to happen. Like, I read it as this is what we're going to change by the end of this month. Period. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, sure. I mean, I thought it was fine, so sure. But like, it was communicated very differently from, say, the completionist case, where it was like, hey, we're thinking of doing this. What do you think, and how can we change this? And they changed it for better or worse. Let's not have that discussion now. But this was like, this is what we're going to do, period. And people were like, okay. And some people liked it, and some people didn't. And now they're like, we're not going to do it after all. That way you lose all credibility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. I find this one of the weirdest U-turns they have made.
Well, I think this statement is a way of making is trying to spin it. But I'll tell you what happened. They were going to do that. I don't believe for a second they weren't going to do that. They're used to steamrolling that group, that section of the community. And when they stood up and said, we're not having it, it surprised the crap out of them because they never get blowback from that. And so now we're backtracking saying, well, we were never going to do that. I mean, we just needed to know what parts of it were bad. So this is all to save face.
I mean, I don't want to make too many assumptions.
Assumptions are bad.
Otherwise, the Cambridge mob is going to
get involved. Get you.
Go get me. But, like, it does... I have to admit, it does look that way. Like, all the signs are pointing in the direction that, you know, things did go as planned, and now they're trying to save face, and instead of admitting we were wrong, they're like, we never planned this.
You know, if they would have had a spin doctor in there who could have handled this, the messaging on this from the beginning, we wouldn't even be having this conversation today.
Well, I was just getting ready to say, Shane, does this sound like something you would say in this situation? Because if it does, then it's complete and utter spin, and we know that.
I don't know if I would have said it exactly as is. I would have tried. Would have tried to provide him more of a cover for it.
Okay, why? So you're saying yes, but you would have done a better job.
Yeah, like if I was asked to spin this, that would have been the case.
Uh huh.
But you shouldn't spin this. That's the whole point. They should have been honest, and they were like, "Okay,
yeah.
We thought this was a good idea. Clearly, you said this was a bad idea, so we're going back to the drawing board and trying something new." If they had said that, they would have gained respect.
Yes, and credibility. We would have been like, okay, cool.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. Yeah.
Yes.
Now it's like, why are you messing with us and just doing random shit? I don't think anybody would appreciate this. Whether this was intended or not, it was handled badly.
All right. Next up on here, Anachronia was asked about. They're going to continue the storyline. Huge landmass to explore. RuneFest will see more reveals.
Yay.
What do you think, Shane? Shall my article come to fruition?
No.
Nah, I don't think so either. But maybe. Mm. You never know. It could.
Tannis wrote an article predicting archaeology. From Anachronia.
Well,
I mean,
saying there's no time like the present if it was ever.
Yeah. Next up, any plans to continue the unfinished quest lines? This was asked by Diana from Clan Quest, has been on the show before for numerous quest weeks, and the answer was that people don't tend to care about the old unfinished Fifth Age storylines. They pull lower. Most people don't care for them. They're focusing on what's right for the game today. That doesn't mean that they don't want to do them. Nothing largely planned for some of the older quest lines. And there are people inside Jagex who would like to work on these things. One of these things is Elemental Workshop Part 5, and Mod Stew is actually one of these people.
Don't you think part of this is all in how they talk about how to wrap up those storylines? Like, if they were to present a picture of a awesome Elemental Workshop quest or an awesome ending to the Gnome saga.
Oh yeah, that could sell.
Wouldn't people be more into, like, more supportive of it? Be like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh, that would be cool.
That's why I think everybody got on board with the complicated comp rework, is because they saw the pictures of all the capes.
You can sell.
That is.
You can sell a lot if you sell it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't tend to care. Like, that's bullshit. People will care if you give them, like, if you give them a good concept.
Give them a reason. And give them a reason to care.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why would a gnome quest be any less awesome than a Six Age quest?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. It's just, yeah.
It's just a question of getting in the minds of, I guess, the standard player base. Because you and I are different than Tannis in terms of questing, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, I will take a break from what I'm doing if it's something that looks really good or really interesting. I mean, I 100% will jump into that content, but you need to make me want to jump into that content, because I'm not going to stop what I'm doing just to do it. I mean, I want a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this question also, like, I was thinking about this. Like, people don't care about unfinished quest lines. I'm like, okay, why are we starting so many new quest lines then? Like, if they know, like, seriously,
I know.
If you know that
that's
quest
one thing,
lines will
that's
go
one thing
unfinished.
That hurt me about the survey, but later.
Yeah, like, if you know quest lines are gonna go unfinished, make them shorter. Make them two or three quests, because that's maybe what you can get out before people lose interest. Then, like, learn from these things.
Yeah,
that's
you guys
sort of
might,
what's missing.
You guys might hate me for this, but I think the Elite Dungeon Trilogy combined with Curse of the Blackstone was a really interesting way to do lore and narrative.
Curse of the Blackstone was bad.
Well, I'm just saying not necessarily the quest itself, but just the general idea of in-game content tying it in with the quest at the end.
That was a perfect.
Well, that's kind of the way it should be, right? I mean, that's the way it is in most games. You do the quest to unlock other things and to open up that content, and that's something that it just doesn't happen here very often.
Yeah, most MMOs work that way. I think, like, when they release, like, they would release an expansion or an update, they usually release like an entire storyline that sort of rounds up on itself, and it might have some open questions at the end that can tie into new things, but, you know, it's a whole rounded up whole, and that's missing from a lot of RuneScape stuff. They tend to, I think it's a theme, honestly. Like, if you look like, oh, we're gonna do expansions and bigger updates, and after one, no, we're gonna do something else, smaller updates and lots of patch notes, apparently. You know, Rune Labs, we're going to do player-owned suggestions, and after a year, no, we're not going to do it at all. Like, there's no...
There's no follow-through.
No consistency.
Right.
There's no strategy. There's no...
That we can see.
But
that doesn't mean there's something not in there internally. But it's just it appears very chaotic to us.
And you know what that usually leads... Sorry, Tanis.
Oh, I was just gonna say, if we were having the same conversation like a month or 2 months ago, it wouldn't be the same conversation, because they would have still had some kind of goodwill. But with this recent with the recent months and stuff, we're right back to going, well, this looks like typical Jagex stuff, and that sucks, because I really thought we had turned a corner. But I don't think this conversation would have been the same, like, a couple months ago.
Mm. I think we can look at the survey to see more of that.
Maybe. I think what is lacking is a continuing vision. Like, when you see this sort of trend, when things really change, it means that there's usually a strong individual or a small group of people, or maybe just a philosophy within the company that keeps things following a common goal and a common strategy. And that is lacking. There's not one person really strongly sort of saying, this is what we're going to go for, this is what we're going to focus on, and this is how we're going to work. And that, I think, is something that Jagex needs. It's too in the moment deciding whatever sounds like the latest fad or the most interesting, or like, and that is wearing off, I think.
I'm surprised we haven't seen a battle royale mode somewhere in here, but
let's not talk about the survey just yet.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay. Wow, it sounds like they should be the game that they identify with, right? And just stick to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard question to ask, and I think this is something that I think the only two people who could potentially answer this are Maud Osborne or maybe even the CEO of the company. You know, what's the overarching vision for the next 5 years?
But Old Skull does it.
They do?
And they do it with the players.
They do it with the players, though.
Well, that's not always a bad
thing. No, but like Old School, they do it with the players. But doing it with the players is their thing. That's their strategy. It's like collaborative. Always talking to the players. Keeping the game spirit, like the old school game spirit. These are themes that have been there since the start of old school. Name one theme that has been part of the RuneScape update strategy for the last 2 years.
I thought you were going to say last year, and I could, but 2 years? No.
There you go. How long has old school been out now?
6 years and a bit.
Yeah, there you go. They have been doing something consistently for 6 years, and look how well it's paying off for them.
Well, they have a very, very good team. That's all, yes, I can say. I mean, they must have just a great team.
But there's great teams in RS3, too.
Yeah, but if the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing and nothing's pulling them together, they're just off flailing, doing jazz hands in the wind. It doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys raised some interesting points there. I don't know if the survey is going to provide clarity on this or muddy the waters further, but I want to move on to something else in this live stream that I found particularly appealing. The question was asked, when can we expect more mobile slots, that is, slots for the Android mobile beta? They've been asked to not say anything about mobile by the marketing team. There's a coordinated plan. Deadlines are being hit internally. More information on new slots, and they even mentioned the word iOS potentially in the coming weeks.
See, I think that's good. Let the marketers do their job. I mean, let them do what they're supposed to be there to do and market these mobile games when they're
and market out, right? All of RuneScape, yeah, in particular, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I mean,
we've seen from the old school mobile release how important it is to get the momentum right on this one. So
yeah, it's good the marketing team has told them already to shut up on it. So.
Said shit.
And
www.shit.
Do you guys think that because of this we are closer to a milestone than it appears? Because as it looks to me, we're still probably, you know, at least 4 months off from an open iOS beta.
Well, see,
and
I
a year
thought,
plus probably out from general release.
I thought that before the last live stream. See, like, when with Mod Edge going, I thought, okay, this is a natural progression. They're, you know, that's being cut down because it's almost ready. And then we had that live stream that just left us going, huh?
Oh, it's also worth noting, let me just step in here, that the new player experience we saw last week is in a release candidate build being tested for release.
That was quick.
That's why they showed it off, because it was pretty much done.
Right. And that's fine. We're cool with that.
Yeah.
But I'm very confused about mobile now, because I originally thought we were probably close, and then we were told, not so much. And then
now the marketing team has told everyone to be quiet about it.
Yeah, so I hope so. Like, I'm really still excited about mobile. But I don't know. I mean, how do you make sense of it, Shane? Like, how do you make sense of it?
I'm in the same boat that you are after this week, to be honest. I don't know, Sirion, you have any insight? That's not just theorizing.
Previously, they mentioned that iOS would not be until the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep that.
I agree.
There might be news about the iOS beta, but it's not going to come before Christmas. That's my... Like, I'm
fairly certain.
Engineering estimates only ever move in one direction. It's a law. Like, they only ever move in one direction.
That's true.
That's forward.
That's true.
So, you know, it's not going to suddenly be around the corner.
Yeah.
You mean they never come in ahead of schedule and under budget?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
No, they never do.
But yeah, so apparently we'll be getting more mobile news soon. I assume that means RuneFest.
Probably.
I have a question. How do you guys feel about everything being turned over to say, hey, more at RuneFest?
It's too much.
Yeah, I agree. Too much. Too many eggs in that RuneFest basket there. But I will say, and I want to actually just talk about the actual implementation of this live stream right now, because this is something that caught my eye. And Mod Shawnee was out this week on his vacation. And, you know, Mod Shawnee has been the face of these live streams for a long, long time. And he does a good job, right? With them. Yep. But it was interesting seeing a different person's take on it, in particular Mod JD, who is in charge of social media and community. And I felt, and I personally enjoyed the marketing aspect that he brought to it, in that he was more focused and laser, let's just say laser focused on the questions that were asked, and pressing the folks on the couch for those answers. So I enjoyed that he was more laser focused. I also, and this is a minor detail, I don't know if I've missed it in the past, but I enjoyed that he read out the names of the people who asked the questions. And I think the third thing I want to say with his live stream that he did here is that yes, at the end of it, they showed off some player artwork. Definitely do more of that. Show more community contributions like that. Because, you know, player artwork is something that's existed forever in RuneScape, from the initial players' galleries to now. And the fact that, you know, we have these live streams almost every week and there's content and space that can definitely be filled up in these live streams, I think it's good to bring the players' artwork out into these live streams. So definitely more on that. And that would be my quick 3 points of things that I noticed that are different this week with JD filling in that I think we should carry on forward with when Mod Shawnee returns.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
In particular, because, I mean, you can do a live stream or you can do a live stream. And I also enjoy these live streams when they're under an hour long, which this week's was, and that was good. You guys didn't feel like there was a lot of content in this one, right?
Well, I mean, honestly, this felt, I mean, okay, it all falls under the live stream umbrella, right? But this was felt more like a press briefing type of thing.
Oh, maybe that's why I enjoyed it more.
But, I mean, you see what I mean? Like, it fit much more in that mold rather than the back-and-forth conversational style that a live stream normally takes.
Okay, so that you hit the nail on the head there with that. Okay, I guess I just enjoy this style of live stream more, and I wouldn't mind seeing more of this, the press briefing to the point kind of adage, I guess. That's a good way of describing it, Tanis. Thank you.
Welcome.
Anything else on the live stream before we move on to other things?
Nope.
My last little thing here is I just want to say I think the reason that they're putting so many eggs in the RuneFest basket is because a couple of years ago they changed kind of like their concept of RuneFest. And so instead of looking at big overarching themes and big visions and bold visions and all this stuff, because they weren't actually fulfilling most of them, they started focusing on content that was going to be out in the next 6 months, next year, whatever. And I think that's why we're seeing so much in that basket and so much being taken away from the edges that could have maybe dropped and the months previous or, you know, immediately after. They're actually scooping all that up and they're shoving it in RuneFest now.
Yeah, I think RuneFest this year is going to be a 4 to 6 month outlook. Nothing beyond that, just like last year's was.
Yeah,
last year I
think so too.
Last year they saved up a bunch of these updates, right? They did the same thing, and I think Shane feels the same as I do about this. It's just, it felt barren. It wasn't big enough. I didn't come away excited about what was coming. It was underwhelming.
The biggest RuneFest thing for you and me was that detour we took.
Yeah.
God, the irony.
Yeah.
It's like, but like, that was sort of the thing, and yeah, sure, we don't get all the updates they promise, but I would really like to see and hear what the JMods want RuneScape to be in a year or 5 years from now.
Yes.
I love that.
Because it shows how passionate they are. It shows how much they care. It shows how well they know the game and where they want it to be. That's what's necessary, and that's...
Well, like...
Without it, RuneFest feels flat. It feels too business-like. It's like, hey, this is what you're going to expect. It feels like a press release. It feels like a bloody press release.
There we are. So this week's live stream was a press briefing, and we don't want RuneFest to be that way, and they shouldn't. They should be hype off the walls kind of thing. What's our vision for the next year?
Well, and look at the – before they started this strategy, like it was something that the community felt they could be a part of. Like I know we're not supposed to be into speculation all that, but it's fun. Using your imagination.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's fun. And there's no better place to do it than in a group with all your other RuneScape players. Like you can share that and maybe, just maybe – you start to develop a vision together. They get to see what the people are getting excited about, and they can, you know, they can just trump the shit out of the audience. Like, oh, do they like this? Oh no, they don't like that. Okay, well, they like this, right? Yeah, big applause. You know, like, and that could have been fun.
They could do it in two parts, right? Like, start with like the first half is the next month, like it's the outlook, and honestly, it is just a long. A month ahead video. That's what it is. But that's fine. Like, do it in person. It's different. Look at the next 4 to 6 months. And then in the second part, look beyond that. Look, what could we do? What might we do? Don't make any promises. Just say, these are the things that are in early stages that we're thinking about. We're always sort of open to figuring out what you like and what you don't like. And if somebody puts an image of Dragon Slayer 2 on the slides, and the entire room erupts in applause, then they bloody well know to make Dragon Slayer 2.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Then that's what RuneFest should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And, you know, I never thought we'd get this insight from a live stream, but there we go. So hopefully this is useful to someone out there. And I'd be interested to hear what you guys also on the player side think of it, too. All right. So speaking of surveys, I think it's time to dive in to the annual survey that came out today. We're not going to go through everything because there's also some demographic type questions in there. How do you feel about X, Y, Z kind of thing? But let's just go through some of the big headlining sections. And one of the first headlining sections that you'll be greeted by in the survey is player-owned updates and drops. So I'm just going to run through these and you guys start screaming if you like them one way or the other. A rare drop table booster, Pet Park, the World Army, Managing Miscellanea Remastered.
Oh, God, don't touch it.
Player-owned Bathyscapes, player-owned Transport Links.
What?
Boss Drop Rework Project, Dungeons as Drops.
They better not do that.
Player owned town.
Ooh.
Player owned.
I'm only interested because it says construction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm down with that. I'm down with that.
The player owned skilling dungeon. Gain golden skilling locations as drops and install them in your own personal dungeon without any competition. What? Go ahead.
I was just thinking that could be bad, but it's going to be awful for the social part of the game.
Yeah,
like it would be fun. I mean, I would be into it, but it's probably bad for the social part of the game.
I think it's a problem with a lot of these player-owned things. Right?
Yes, like, and that's why I said very unappealing on the most of them.
That's how I started out. Like when they talked about player-owned stuff, like, oh, I'm not gonna like most of these, but some of these was like, yeah, I kind of like these.
Golden Clue Scrolls.
Nope.
Clue Scroll Boosters.
Nope.
Land Out of Time Base Camp Expansion.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Player Owned Adventurers Guild. So
I don't understand that.
Yeah, and you know, of these, very few pop out to me. If anything, I would like to see maybe something done with Miscellanea.
Oh, Shane, but if we tell them to touch it, they might break it.
No, I'd imagine it would be wind up being more like managing Anachronia.
You got to be careful what you wish for with that.
Okay.
And I mean, Miscellanea worked so far, so I'm curious about the player owned town and the pet farm or the pet park. Oh, I thought that was fun. We have so many so many pets. You know, like.
But we have the menagerie and the player owned house. Why?
But this one, maybe people could bring their pets. Like, it would be on the surface world, maybe. Where everyone, you know, okay.
It says level up your pets, gain traits, send them on pet quests that are pet versions of existing quests.
Oh God, no!
Well, never mind. Never mind. I was hoping it was going to be more like a Colosseum to have pets killing each other, ripping each other apart. But
being the rat pit back, but for all pets.
Yes.
I saw a Boss Drop rework project, and I thought this would be reworking the way boss drops work, but no, it's looking at the less played, less lucrative bosses. So the KBD, the Dagonoth Kings.
There's so many things in this survey that are like increased drop rates for this.
Yeah.
Increased drop rates for this.
Okay.
Have a double drop weekend.
Right.
I'm like, are you out of your freaking mind?
So it wasn't just caught that.
But replace drop rate with XP rate and imagine if they would ever consider that. Right? Like how, if they have learned so much, then why would you turn around and do the exact same thing, only but in another sense?
It is shocking to me how many things they put in that survey. Where I'm like, yeah, of course, half the community is going to like this because they want high XP rates. But it's the worst idea ever.
Drop rates.
And same thing with the player-owned skilling dungeons. Golden clue scrolls.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why it is going to mess things up so badly.
Well, and here's another question. How does any of that work into a living game, which is what they're talking about doing and being, right? I mean, we just went through that, like, with the skilling bonanza, and it worked. They did a really good job with it. Where is that stuff? Like, I didn't see it at all. It's not in there. It's not in what you just read.
It might be in some of the stuff later on, but I didn't vote for many of these for the same reasons we've just outlined. I don't know if we're outliers on that, but it'd be interesting to hear what you guys in the community think. The next section was on combat. Which of the following deters you from bossing? A lack of understanding the combat system, high level armor and weapon requirements, a lack of access and teleports to the bosses.
Not really.
A lack of a clear guide to what boss to choose at your level.
Nope.
Cost of consumables, food, runes, potions, etc.
Nope.
Fear of taking on the bosses.
Yeah.
Poor grouping system.
Obviously.
No friends to boss with.
No problem.
I think they missed the biggest part there, which is the other PVMers. It's the reason that I don't boss.
That's a good point.
It's a bit
of a toxic community sometimes. It's also just like, I don't like it. Like, seriously, that's the main reason. Yeah. I don't care for it.
The main ones I put on this one was the cost of consumables and the armor and weapon requirements.
No, that's not the problem. I have all the money in the world.
Well, I don't.
I do. That's really not the problem. Like,
well, it's my problem.
Oh, okay.
But even then, Shane, I mean, really, there's enough people with enough money you can borrow stuff from people.
I guess that's
not that big of a deal.
I mean, I'm sure if I wanted to, I could ask David to buy me a set of essentials.
Tell us, you have all the money in the world.
Good luck.
I just think it's a poor grouping system. I mean, a lot of it is toxic, and honestly, I don't find the combat all that enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Next up, how often should we launch various types of content? Choices are every month, every 3 months, every 6 months, every 9 months, every year, every 2 years, or not at all.
What a useless question.
Combat dungeons?
I mean, I don't remember what I answered because what are we measuring this against?
What is a combat dungeon?
Like, well, first of all, that, but like, I struggle. What
combat dungeons? I think of the Brimhaven dungeon, or the Sophonim dungeon, or the Polyport dungeon.
Okay, that's not how I guess I didn't really think about it. But
easier solo bosses, harder solo bosses, easier multiplayer bosses, Slayer mobs, elite dungeons, hard multiplayer bosses. And, you know, I said every 2 years on these just because I didn't want to say no, never at all. I said every 9 months for Slayer monsters. Elite dungeons every year along with combat dungeons every year. But everything else every 2 years, I feel.
I mean, I gave them a bit more frequency. But then again, like, if 10 weeks are going to be patch notes, then they're definitely not what I said. Like, that's the point. What are we comparing this against? What is, like...
People who
like combat want to take every week on this.
Yeah.
What value are they getting out of this question? This was such a weird question to me.
What if this...
And it never comes back, right? They don't ask, how often do you want a skill rework? How often do you... Like,
what if the really point on this is to determine the cadence for medium-sized updates? Because all of these are generally medium-sized updates that are listed here.
But they're only combat medium-sized updates.
Right, but it still determines the cadence that people would like a medium-sized update.
From the combat community.
I guess.
Also, so only you, you don't just decide on a cadence. You have so many developers working on content, and the number of developers working on content determines your cadence of medium updates. Period. You can't make more updates than your developers can make.
Okay.
And it's silly to release less than your developers can make.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
The question adds no value.
All right.
And I thought it was
weird. We should have just skipped it then. We have considered making planned and frequent changes to the combat meta. This would mean that the best weapons, armors, mobs, and whatnot would change regularly, requiring you to change your strategies when playing. How appealing is this idea?
Oh, they're going to howl. They're going to howl, man. I think it's a good idea, but I of course I wouldn't. I don't do combat, so I think it would make people that do it howl.
Yeah, they need to do it.
Yeah, they need to do it. But once again, this is the kind of thing, don't do it for just doing it. Do it for a reason.
Yeah.
Isn't that happening through the weapons diversity? Like, isn't that like what... Those things are supposed to be happening anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, another one, if we were to make changes so that the best weapons and armors would change, how would you like that to be implemented all at once, several batches or smaller changes, perhaps even one change a week? Or don't make changes. You need to do what is best for the game.
I think this is really interesting. I first was like, do it over time, right? Don't... Just change it over time. And then I realized, if they start doing that, I will never know combat anymore. Because it will always be changing, and I don't play enough to learn something new every week. So that's why I said, chuck it all at me in one big change.
Yeah.
You know what,
I will suddenly not know combat, but I only have to relearn it once.
But they're
and
talking
that's
about
why I said,
continually changing it, though.
Yeah, like, they would still release maybe, like, a massive update every year. But at least I'll have to relearn combat every year rather than every week.
Yeah.
Like, at the beginning, it appealed to me that PVMers will always have to sort of work and figure out new things. I like that, because it means they're on the same level as me. And then I realized, but I have to figure out what's new every single time I do a Slayer task once in a fortnight. You know, so give them to us in big batches. Throw everything over.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll matter much because everyone is going to say don't change.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for a game. Like, I can see it being good in some ways, but I can also see it being extremely frustrating in others to where, because, I mean, how many of us do have that kind of time where you can learn something like that all the time? Like, and then I think about on a skilling side, would I want my methods changing constantly? And I don't think so. So, yeah. I mean, it don't matter. No one's going to vote for that anyway.
Yeah, that combat section was... Can I just take a moment and say that the combat section was weird?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really long as well, like it.
Yeah.
It felt like half the survey was combat.
It was 6 pages printed as a PDF. RuneScape will be attempting a different approach to content, something called the remaster. Will be attempting a different approach to content. This takes existing game content like areas, bosses, dungeons, training methods, etc., and updates them graphically, rectifies bugs, and...
I'm sorry. I had expansions in my throat. I mean, a cough in my throat. Sorry.
And adds new elements to play and complete. So if we were to remaster this content, how important is it that it includes new stories, new rewards, rebalancing, fixes and functionality improvements, new surprises, a graphical improvement, retaining a sense of familiarity, and new challenges?
Who writes these questions? Come on now.
It feels like it should be all of the above on these.
Right! Yeah, shouldn't it? Because you can call it what you want. You're talking about expansion. You pulled the plug on it too much because you panicked. And you're going, oh, well, actually, it was a really good idea. We kind of really wanted to be going in that direction. Duh.
I don't agree that this is an expansion.
No,
I
it's not.
Disagree.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Expansion is
because
brand
Anaconia
new
is a new area and it's also an expansion.
Yep.
But that's what this is talking about, right?
Falador was a rework and a remaster. That's a remaster.
But they're talking about old and like old with new content, right? Like
yeah, so like the rework they did of Burthorpe and Taverly and made it into the beginner's area. I don't know if you remember that. That's been a while ago.
Oh, okay, but not having a... Okay, I took that.
I think that is what a remaster would do. It adds new content, but it takes away old stuff. Mm-hmm. And sort of.
So why are we calling it a remaster instead of a rework?
It is a rework.
Right.
And
this is confusing. Like, this is just confusing the shit out of me.
And, you know, my response to this was yes, please, yes.
Yeah.
Because we have been calling for this for so long. And now hear me out. Mobile is coming out. Now imagine a mobile player joining the game world and walking from the beginner's area, going over White Wolf Mountain, Kafurbi, all looks shiny and fancy, go down the road, Sears Village. It's a mess. It's so different from the rest of the game. It's dead content as well, pretty much, except for some trees people chop behind the back. So I think it makes a lot of sense strategy-wise as well. Like, you can do a lot of stuff in existing areas still. There's still enough room. There's enough stuff you can take away. It will make the experience more consistent for mobile players and new players coming into the game. Everybody wins, right? Like, how are they not doing this already on every area in the world that needs this?
Yeah.
Like, it's such a tip-in. It's a tip-in. Like, I get so tired of Jaggers continuously having the feeling that they need to add new stuff, new quest lines, new islands, new areas, new people, while there is so much already there that could be made so much richer and more interesting. Because on the first pass through to any city, you might not get every single detail. You might not get every single story. But if you make sure it's all worked out and there's a solid base, you will feel that there is a story behind it. You will notice it. That's how D&D campaigns work, right? You make sure that stuff happens, even though players don't interact with it. So it feels rich. It feels dynamic. And you know, you suddenly have a proper, rich RPG world. I vote 100% yes on this. Just this, please. Next
year. Okay. I'm going to start moving through these a little bit more quickly here, because we're only a very short way through. But how appealing would the proposed combat updates be? A skill in combat boss? Slayer Towers and Elite Dungeon, and just yell if you like any of these. Grouping system improvements. Hostilius the Autocrat. Slayer Tower Remastered. Pernix, yeah. Virtus, and Torva Dungeon. Elite Dungeon. High level cow and chicken dungeon.
I laughed at this one, and also no.
Yeah
no.
More early game bosses. Like mole barrel.
Yeah, that
style.
That probably needs to happen.
Land Out of Time Slayer / Elite Dungeon.
No. Ooh, yeah.
No.
That'd be fun. No?
No.
Landslides randomly generated Slayer dungeons.
If it's better executed than the Ark.
Good point. Fight Caves and Jad Remastered. King Black Dragon Remastered. The Boss Hub, a place for PVM players to gather to find groups and teleport to bosses, and for new players to get info into bossing with boss-specific armies and recommended orders.
Why do we need new hubs?
We have one of those. It's called the Max Guild.
I was thinking that, too.
Mm-hmm.
God
Wars...
Because
it's got the boss portal there.
Yeah.
Just saying.
God Wars Dungeon Remastered. Big Game Slayer.
Please no.
Please
no.
No.
Abyssal Slayer Dungeon. Slayer Bosses. Player owned raidable dungeons.
Oh god.
New dragons mining and smithing rework, including the fabled Dragon Dragon.
That would be funny.
Yeah, it would. Mm. It would. I actually said yes to that one. I mean, these are, once again, everybody except for the introductory levels, everybody who likes combat is going to say yeah to all of these.
I mean, maybe, yeah, sure.
So
I would only vote for like the remasters.
Yeah, same.
The ones that said that they were going to rework, then that's fine. Because I mean, because Therion has a good point. Because you do, it's like walking across the time. Like you're back in time all of a sudden.
Yeah.
When you walk from one place to another. It's weird.
New areas. How appealing are each of the following updates? Wen reveals Cam Dazzle. Elder God Wen rises up from her sleep and reveals Cam Dazzle, the ruined dwarven city of the Mkando. RuneScape
that
Auto Chess.
Super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. No, it's kind of like a game within a game. It'd be like the evolution of mobilizing armies.
Like a miniature game?
Yeah.
Or
Conquest.
Conquest
is a game within a game.
Yeah.
Look how well that's doing.
Yeah. Castle Wars Remastered?
No. Like, remaster it by pulling it out.
Like, I feel they could do this, but it would need an instance, and they just need to find a way to make it relevant that people are going
to
do it. So unless it's going to, you know...
Castle Wars is the best candidate to get Team PvP back on the...
Yeah, I agree.
On the charts.
I agree. Second to that, the Clan Battlefield. Ardoian Remastered.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Dark Side of Zanaris. The RuneScape Pet Battler.
Yeah!
No!
No.
It's not Pokemon.
Pet Battler?
Yeah, like, it's basically
like
Pokemon.
Oh, we can't just fight our pets?
No, the pets battle each other.
Oh, well, never mind. Damn it.
4 and 3 returns. The needle is used again to bring the wilderness of the Third Age God Wars into the modern day. The wilderness becomes
what?
A war zone.
What? That's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll have more to say on the needle after. RuneScape Card Battler and Collection System. Oh, they
now
put...
where have I heard this idea?
So wait a minute, isn't that what you just said?
No,
is this
is
a different thing.
This is
or
putting
is it the
Chronicle.
Same thing?
This is putting Chronicle in the main game.
Ugh. It's Chronicle.
Okay.
It's Chronicle. I. What?
No, Varrock Remastered.
I don't care. Yes.
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 Kiramja Remastered. Yes.
Yes.
All right. Themed Weekends is up next, and this one I just was like, please don't do any of these.
I said no on all of these.
Well, except for the just bonus don't. XP burn weekend, where bonus XP
nope.
burns at twice the rate, so we can get
nope.
rid of it. No? Okay.
Nope.
I said very appealing
screw
on
all
that,
of that
one.
Screw all of that.
Luck Weekend, I said very unappealing. I don't want that. Nope. Double Resource Weekend, same thing. And Double Drop Weekend, because these mess with the economy more than a double XP weekend does. Let's face it.
Yeah.
So.
I'm torn, though, because those are also, like, ways to get people engaged in a limited time-gated thing, right?
It doesn't always have to be about XP or drops.
Well, no, I mean, but that's... I don't know. God.
Not worth it.
And next up was parts on Treasure Hunter. It said that you spend less time on Treasure Hunter, or you stop spending on Treasure Hunter altogether. And, you know, I said I never spent on it, so it obviously funneled me into this. So it started asking me why about that. But I don't think we need to go through these ones, because it's just opinions on microtransactions, and we know where the community is on that.
Yeah, they
I think I've also made.
Yeah, so we don't need to go over that. Same thing with Solomon's General Store.
Was there a question, though, about making that simpler? Because I will say this. I hate having to take 10 minutes to learn how to do a Treasure Hunter promotion to spend my two daily
no.
keys.
No.
That I hate.
There was not that, but you could write in if
good
you
figure.
Want.
Okay.
Next up is the quest section. How many quests should be released a year with options ranging from 0 to 30?
Caught a range there.
I said 5.
That's exactly what I was thinking, was 5.
I said 6.
Okay, so roughly, you know, 1 every 2 months. So we're on the page there. What is the minimum amount of time a quest should take to play through? I said 30 minutes, because there should be no minimum.
Yep.
It should just flow as it needs to.
Exactly.
There should also be 5-minute quests as well.
As long as I can do it, I'm happy.
How important is that quests include new models, new environments, and whatnot? Not important at all. Bottle mm-hmm. quests, please.
I said slightly important.
Slightly.
Like, it's kind of cool to have it, but...
We don't want quests being held back
no.
because of that. Exactly. How important is story and non-quest updates like dungeons, bosses, skill training methods? I said moderately important.
Somewhat.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think it's important, but I like it to be there.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I like
it. It comes into the dynamic world that I spoke before. It update needs to fit in the world. There needs to be an explanation why it's there. Like, King Black Dragon, I think, is a great example. Why is the King Black Dragon there?
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Now we
I mean, there is a reason.
Yeah, there is. And now we get to choose what quest we'd like to see go forward. Araxite quest?
Nope.
No. Who is the raptor?
No.
No.
Ooh,
I agree.
I kind of want to know.
I just don't care about that guy. Or gal. We don't even know.
I think it's a gal. I want
to
know.
Back to the God Wars. Use the needle to travel back to 4 and 3 with a group of characters during the God Wars.
No needle, please.
Yeah, no needle.
I know. That's the problem. Like, I want to see that, but I don't want you to mess with the needle stuff. Like, could we just do a flashback, or like we're reading a book and then we're there kind of thing?
Or use the ring for meeting history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we already had a travel device.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's very limited compared to the needle, though.
Third age, though.
Yeah, but I'm worried about the needle becoming this, like,
me too. That's why I'm
mulligan type
I wrote somewhat appealing on anything that mentioned the needle. just because I want them to be cautious with it. The origin of Zaros. I feel like we already know all we need to know about Zaros.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. White Knight finale? Yes.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Death of the Wise Old Man. No, he can't
no.
die.
No! What the hell?
I said yes! I want to know how he dies! No, what?
Jeez. Mod Raven slipped that one in, I bet you. It's like, kill the wise old man.
It could be super interesting. Like, that could be really well done. It could be really well done.
And that crazy witch.
It would also be the first RuneScape funeral.
Yeah.
No, no, no.
It says, you are confident that the killer has attended his funeral, so attend and investigate who or what killed him.
Ha! The guy in the tree, of course.
Desert Treasure 2. Recover 4 lost Zaros Majorat and unlock new spells. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Dragon Slayer 2. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The World Wakes 2. A sleeping heist into the sleeping chambers of an elder god with the Guardians of Guthix.
Oh, can we kill the elder gods?
No, we're going to wake up the elder gods. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, no. The Slayer Master Trials is a quest that requires 99 Slayers. Pass the trial and become an actual Slayer Master.
Oh, yes. I want that.
No.
Yes, we need new Slayer Masters. They all got wiped out, remember? Mm. We need new ones. Got to replace the ranks.
Sirion?
I said meh on this. I thought it was a cool idea, but it was a skill cape quest, and why Slayer? Like, let's not do Slayer.
Temple at Sentistan too. I mean, dig deeper into the deep site was... Dig site with Zaros. It seems like that's the way they're pushing us with the Elder Gods.
But we've already done that.
Yeah.
And that's sort of my problem with this list. It was all like Zaros and Majora. I'm like, there's so much more interesting stuff. I didn't really feel like I had much to pick from.
Yeah, same. The new Elf Storyline quest. A 6-age quest that brings Prif and Tardiad together as the elves of the two worlds must face a terrible threat from their past. I'm always up for more elf quests.
You know, it's interesting. It's just, yeah, but then it'll be open-ended for the next 15 years. Oh. I don't know.
All right. Recent and even non-quest updates like The Land Out of Time, Breaking the Storm, have tried to build coherent ongoing storylines. Were you aware that this was happening? Yes. Are you interested in the current storyline, which involves Karapak, Thought, the Needle, and the Elder Gods? Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Does an ongoing story make you more or less interested in upcoming updates?
It doesn't.
If it has to do with the ongoing story,
yeah.
If not, then. No.
All right. Now here's the big one. Do you think updates like bosses, dungeons, skill training methods, and more should be tied into the ongoing storyline of Karapak and the Elder Gods? I said the same as they are now.
Yeah.
And we're interested in exploring the human kingdoms of Varrok, Felidor, Ardoyan in future content. Please rate the following aspects according to how much they interest you. History of human tribes in the Fourth Age. Open warfare between the kingdoms.
Nope.
Interaction between the kingdoms and non-human regions.
Yeah.
Skullduggery, assassinations, etc. Ooh, yeah.
Tiny bit.
Politics and rivalries between the kingdoms. Absolutely.
Hell yes! Give me that! Shit!
Do you think that can... See, I just don't see him pulling that off. I mean, because when you think of that, you're thinking Game of Thrones, right? I mean, you're thinking some good stuff. I don't think that's what we'd get.
Maybe. But if it was pulled off right, it adds so much to the world.
Yeah.
It could be done so well.
Sarah Dominist and Zamorak religion in the kingdoms?
No.
I said no, not really either. I feel like we've established that enough. And how appealing are following updates to you. More quests here. The Menophos finale.
Crickets.
Barrow's Brothers quest, The Search for Death.
Another one?
Yeah, right?
New vampire storyline.
No.
But
don't
finished.
Start a new one.
It's done.
Don't start a new one!
No!
The return of King Valance, his return to Falador, but so much time has passed that many are suspicious of his intentions.
Ooh.
That was that a real cool idea, actually.
Yeah, that one does. Thought Quest, no thank you. Pilgrimage of Guthix, a memory of Guthix has been traveling the same path.
You don't want a Thought Quest?
No.
How dare you? He's the best character.
He is. He is pretty good. I want to hear Madshani talk about it on stream.
But the Pilgrimage of Guthix is a memory of Guthix traveling the same path Guthix traveled when he first became a god.
That could be super deep. And
yeah, that would.
Yeah.
If they take that to needle levels. Holy shit. What's the quest? The needle skips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Riders of the Apocalypse quest. With the Elder Gods on the brink of destroying everything, the Riders of the Apocalypse have set up permanently join them against an Elder God. I feel like we should just say yes on this one to get the Elder God storyline done with.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this feels fairly random, and looking at this and the other stuff, it almost makes me think that the way this survey was made is they sent an email to all JMods, what do you want to build in 2020? They all sent their responses, they categorized them in combat, bosses, skilling, questing, and chucked them in a survey. That's how it feels made.
Yeah, because there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
There's some overlap, there's gaps, there's no... Yeah.
Well, and it's like what they're doing with what they've been doing with movies, like for the last however long, where it's like, ooh, there's a new Top Gun. Yeah, I saw that back in the 80s. Okay. But the same thing's happening here. It's like, I don't think that works in a video game, does it? Like, you can't just be like, ooh, Lumbridge 2.0. Like, or whatever, you know, take your pick, because a lot of them, it feels like we're just basically redoing the same story. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Next on the list is the Breaking History Quest, a sequel to Making History and Meeting History, where a far more explorable area of the Second Age would be available, including a young Guthix. Yes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Sons of V Quest.
I don't get it.
The Sons of V?
Yeah, the god V had several children while off-worlds. Now these demigods have come to Relica and are demanding revenge.
Oh, the dude from what we got to see about 3 seconds of?
Yeah.
That guy? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Violet is blue, too.
Yes!
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so good.
Yeah.
One of a Kind, too, the Dragon Rider quest.
Yes, that I want to see. I want to do that one.
And finally, Monkey Madness 2.
No.
Yes. 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 Monkey Madness 2.
I was in the middle.
Okay.
Because it was not a fun quest to do when I did it.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
It was hard.
Now, do you agree with the rebalances done to Hunter and the player-owned farm? We've rehashed that debate before, but it'll be interesting
to see
what the community has to say on it. Do you feel that it was about right, went too far, went a little too far, could have gone a little further, or didn't go far enough? We know where the community is going to fall on that one, too. How interested are you in the following kinds of skilling updates? Existing skills to 120.
Nope.
No.
Yeah.
No. New skill training methods, like deep sea fishing and the Hall of Memory? Sure. Skill reworks? Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
New skills? Slightly.
Not really.
Yeah, not really.
I'm halfway.
Yeah. Alrighty. Do you agree with raising the cap of a skill by 5 to 6 levels at a time, i.e. going from 99 to 105 with a number of unlocks and 1 updates? Players would have a greater amount of time to reach the new skill cap, and there would be a greater density of unlocks.
I think this is interesting. But also, this is gonna do the same thing as storylines, right? They're gonna start with it and not finish it. Also, it's gonna be super confusing to players.
Yep.
Why does one skill stop at 105 and the other at like 113, for example?
Yeah.
Why? People won't get that. I think it's already confusing with 99 and 120.
And you should be able to ask this. You should be able to know this internally based on metrics and internal research without asking the players.
That too.
Skilling generates less gold than combat. Which of the following approaches would you like to bring combat and skilling closer in terms of generating gold? Bring combat money-making down in line with non-combat, rebalance the most unbalanced combat moneymakers, buff a number of combat moneymaking methods, or introduce some new moneymaking methods for skilling, or do nothing.
Buff combat moneymaking? What?
Bring combat moneymaking down across the board.
Yes.
I said all of them except for bringing it down all the way, because I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, that's not fair. So, I think
as well get your shots in while you can, because
no, but like let's be honest, combat people and PVMers just know their shit. They earn something. Like, that's fine. It's just that there should be other ways to earn it as well, and that doesn't exist. And that needs.
Well, but there's never going to be a way to, you know, I mean, there's never going to be a 50 mil an hour type thing like they have with Telos. Like, I think that should be nixed a little bit.
Yeah, and that's why I say take the unbalanced stuff, right, and fix it in combat. Definitely do that. But, like, don't pull the whole baseline down.
Yeah. Okay. Which three skills would you most like to rework? For me, I answered this question on the podcast a few weeks ago. That is fletching, crafting, and construction.
Construction, fletching, and fire making.
Okay.
Construction, crafting, and... Nope, just construction and crafting. That's all I got. All
right.
I was so tempted to do mining, smithing.
Oh, no.
Mining, smithing, invention, the three latest ones.
Yeah, I was wondering why that was an option on here.
Yeah.
How do you feel about increasing free-to-play to level 30, where currently players can skill to level 5? Absolutely, with mobile.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I have an Ivan. I have an Ivan, man, and I got a daily challenge for agility. Do the Burf Orb Agility Lab. And it's like... 8 laps, and after 4 laps, I was level 5 and would not get any XP. It's level 5 is nothing. I think 30 is way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you actually have a playable game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How appealing are the following updates to you? Construction to 120 and a rework.
I want the rework. I just don't want the 120. Why do they come together?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It would be more content and improved training, moving away from building and rebuilding the same thing. A more attractive and intuitive POH with a graphical rework as well. Invention golems?
That sounded interesting.
Yeah, teach them how to perform certain activities like fighting and combat training. Yeah, why not? A skilling boss similar to Big Game Hunter.
Yes. I want to see that.
All right. Skilling dungeons dedicated to particular non-combat skills. They would include all methods of training that skill and require your knowledge in that skill to navigate.
That's like the fishing platform, I feel, is already too uniform.
Yeah, I agree. It could just be something similar like that in an area that they bring out.
It could be something like a Prif district.
Yeah,
that's
there you go. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
But rather than a skilling dungeon.
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be a dungeon per se.
Yeah, why is everything in the dungeon?
Is safe cracking too? Bank heist? No, rebalance safe cracking as it is. It's too strong. God damn it.
Leave it alone. Don't touch it.
I don't think you can get the awesomeness of heists into a game like RuneScape.
You just can't.
You can't really represent that feeling, I think.
Dungeoneering is represented with Dungeoneering Race and new scenarios, including competitive modes, survival modes, and more.
That's interesting.
Floor 61 is also here.
I think floor 61 should be for all the assholes that bitch at people in their groups. And we should just put them all together and let them do floor 61.
Okay. Magic smithing rework, similar to how the mining and smithing rework rebalance melee gear to make it viable and a moneymaker. We looked at doing the same for magic gear, likely with crafting, rune crafting, and magic. Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. That's why I said crafting.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Summoning to 120 and rework, a graphical rework, and new familiars offering at least one new familiar at each level all the way to 120 would be redesigned to focus more on XP from familiar use.
See, it needs a redesign, but not just a still pouch-making skill redesign. You know what I mean? Like, you need to do a mining smithing redesign of that.
I mean, it's also,
take it to 120.
Bingo. Bingo, I agree. Range
fascination with that.
Range smithing rework, focusing on crafting, fletching, and woodcutting. Yes, 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 and yes. I think I speak for you guys on that too.
Yeah.
Player constructed agility course.
That sounds fun.
That might be fun, yeah.
It's especially fun if you can invite other people to do yours.
Yeah, that would be good.
That actually might make agility better. I'm cool with that one.
Yeah.
That might be fun.
Next up, skilling abilities. Nothing in here about skilling offhands, but I think this is the close that we get. Abilities that aid you when you're skilling. Imagine area of effect skilling abilities that clear broad range of resources or damage over time abilities that keep gathering resources after you've stopped. And I like the idea of skilling abilities, but I don't like the way that is described.
I would love the idea, but everyone's going to be, it's OP, it's too much XP. It's like, I just don't even worry about it. Like, would it be awesome? Yeah, but until they fix the 200 thing, we can't have it. So, fix the game, and then we can get some new toys. But we can't have new toys until you fix the other thing.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. Cities as areas to be rebuilt, like Varrock and Ardoin, could be improved by the player, adding new areas to explore, attracting new characters, and adding more skilling locations. And that is survey complete.
Cool.
Thank goodness. That was rough. That was rough.
It was. And, I mean, I don't know exactly what's going to come of this. I don't know what the player base is going to say, but I want to ask you guys, what was your favorite thing that you would absolutely want to see out of this?
All the remasters.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see the remasters, but honestly, there was not one thing that jumped out that I said, oh my god, I hope this happens. I really want this to happen. There wasn't any.
Okay.
I mean,
I found myself underwhelmed by the topics I was interested in. Like, I was underwhelmed with the quest. I was underwhelmed with the skilling options. And I was surprisingly interested in some of the combat options.
Yeah.
Those sounded at least somewhat interesting, even to me. And that makes me sad, because it felt like there's no accurate representation of all the cool stuff that's out there.
All right.
It feels like the agenda is already sort of narrowed down, and we're only sort of picking on the details. Like, a lot of these options feel really specific, or like some of the things just came back so many times, like all the two 120s. Like, it feels like it's already sort of decided among Jagex that that's
just
what,
a question of how are we going to 120.
Exactly. So, you know, that the survey is very leading in the way it asks things.
Okay.
It is very sort of assuming of whatever, and I didn't really feel like I could fully represent what I don't and do want.
All right. If you could pick one thing, though, that you absolutely did want, what would it be?
I mean, some of the quests were really good, but I think mostly I just want the area remaster. Some of them sounded really good, especially the Ardoin one.
All right,
let's go for the Ardoin one.
As for me, the magic and ranged armor, mining and smithing type remasters, focusing on crafting, fletching, rune crafting, and the like. That's my top one out of everything on the survey. And I'd say probably after that, some of the quests, like the second Desert Treasure, Dragon Slayer 2, for example. I'm a bit wary of working with the needle, though. Too much.
Let's like stick the needle somewhere and not come back to it.
All right.
Let's stick it in an Elder God.
Oh, I wonder what that would do. Okay, we don't know. All right. Well, with that being said, that pretty much, I think, wraps up the survey side of it. New elf quest line, too. So that one would be good as well, I think. So,
but it's a new quest line.
No, it's just new elf storyline. It would be within the existing elf line, I think.
Not really. It's new storyline.
Okay, you're right. You're right. Well,
Sam.
All right. Well, I got mine of the magic and ranged mining and smithing type reworks with crafting, rune crafting, and the like, as well as Desert Treasure 2 and Dragon Slayer 2. I think those are the ones that I come away with here. We also have the month ahead for September, which is, you know, kind of quiet, like we've seen leading up to RuneFest. We have the Slayer log and bank placeholders, but beyond that, not too much else coming this month, aside from the raffle. And
yeah, well,
the
patch weeks that we've been getting the last 2 months seem to be going down really well with the community, so why not keep doing that? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a whole another month. And even at that, I mean, is anyone going to be flipping out over a Slayer log? I mean, the bank is a big deal, but I don't look for that to actually even hit this month. So, yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
There's also going to be some dev diaries with Mod Osborne about the survey that we just talked about.
And some changes, which leads into the thing like, oh, we're not going to be consistent in what we've been doing last year, but try yet a new, different approach.
Yes.
Let's just stick with something. So we know what's up. As long as it's not patch notes.
They have stuck with that.
They have stuck with that. Maybe not that.
Alrighty. Well, that pretty much wraps up the RS segment this week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that on the survey. We're going to move on to a couple of questions before tech news. But first, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this week. I'd like to thank Arvids L., Brock H., Cass, Darren L., Diana, Kyle, Logan H., Rippeth, Sam W., Tom V., and Zez. Thank you all of you for your wonderful support. It truly does mean the world to us to enable what we do here at RSBNB Update, everything from the monthly bit to the inside RSBNB Update specials and even our monthly roundtables that we've been doing. So thank you, everybody. It means the world to us. And if you want to find out more about this and gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, vote in the monthly bits topics, just head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. For as little as $1 a month, you will get a special mention in our show notes, early access to the show notes, and the ability to join in our roundtable discussions, vote on the monthly bit, and of course, you help us fund the costs for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show, in addition to everything else. So if you want to support the show, the Patreon is one way to do it, and you gain a lot from doing that. Just head over to patreon.com/rsbnb to learn more. All right, and it's worth noting we are working towards that $99 tier, which is movie night in the RSBNB Discord, which will likely include some Star Trek. So if any of this sounds at all appealing to you, patreon.com/rsbnb. And thank you once again, everyone.
I just want to thank all of you Patreons. You're the reason we're able to do what we do. And unfortunately, I have a hard out. I've got somewhere that I have to be. So I want to thank everyone for listening. And I'm leaving you in the very capable hands of Shane and Sirion. And I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Dennis. Take care.
Thank you.
You ready to do these questions there, Sirion?
I am always ready for listener questions.
All right. From Whitey. Hi, Shane. As you often talk about other games on the show, such as Star Trek Online, do you AFK RuneScape on a second screen? If so, what is your go-to AFK activity? I'm guessing it's not waterfall fishing.
Is it not?
No. And, you know, this is something that I've been a little bit disappointed about with Anachronia, is that I've been doing Agility, I've been doing Big Game Hunter, that ever since July, I really haven't had much time to do the more laid-back things. I'm finally getting back into that, and that this week has actually included Butterfly, Barehanded Butterfly Capturing, and Crystal Woodcutting. That's what I've been doing in-game on RS for AFKing. Sometimes I'll go to the Ark and do that too for Bamboo. But if you're referring to what I do when I AFK RuneScape, sometimes I actually read.
That's good.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody else does that, but that's just the way it is. But, you know, YouTube videos and the like from time to time, that kind of thing. Sometimes I just dedicate full attention to RS.
I tend to go and catch up on some of my watch later lists on YouTube when I AFK. Sometimes I AFK when I should be doing work. Don't tell my boss.
Mobile?
No.
Oh, okay.
When I work from home.
Okay, fair enough.
Might have RuneScape open on the second screen. Eh. That's how I got most of my ARC resources, to be honest.
Well, that's one way of doing it. But yeah, I think that answers that one. I answered it both in terms of what we do in game and what we do out of the game for AFK activities. So hopefully, that's worthwhile, because I am going for 120 woodcutting at the moment. So that's the activity. Next one from Sunset Fish. What's an old part of RuneScape that you look back on with rose-tinted glasses? He says, I miss gathering in the general stores to fight with other players and buying random items that people dump there.
Yeah, I remember those days. It was really good.
Yeah, okay.
Rose-tinted glasses. I'm not sure, actually. I think, to me, what I really enjoyed was the time where it was hard to get around.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Like, right now, I am guilty of this as well. Like, I will be in Priv Dinis and I will teleport to the Priv Dinis Lodestone because it's quicker. Like, yep. I do this.
Yeah.
And
yep.
It is a shame because you see so much less of the world and the places. And I remember, like, when it was, like, when I couldn't afford the law runes to use teleport spells, right? I remember those days. Like, I had to be really careful when I used law runes, and sometimes I had, like, 50 law runes in my bank, and that would be a luxury if I wanted to use them. That was a really enjoyable time, especially because there's some really cool ways to get around in the game. Like, the train between Dorgashun and... No, Dorgash... Can and the cave goblin city and the dwarf cities, like that's like a train line. Like,
oh yeah, right. There's also really the train line between Varrock and Keldegrim.
Exactly. Like there's all these cool sort of ad hoc like methods, and you unlock them to quests, and they were really useful. And you hardly use them anymore. Like the Keldegrim one is so useful because Keldegrim happens to be one of the places where it's hard to teleport to. But you know. I wish that was still there. I think that was really... Like, back in the day, it was exciting. Especially the first time I entered the members world. You know, it's so big, and having to find your way around was a lot of fun.
You remember having to do the quest to go under White Wolf Mountain?
Oh, yeah. That was I tried doing it as one of the first things, but you have to go over the mountain to finish it.
Yeah,
which was
that's really hard to do as a level three.
Yeah, it is. It is.
For me, it would be the dynamic wilderness, because you know, back in the day, you used to have to go into the wilderness to do level three clues. But this was back when PvPing was very popular still. And, you know, I miss the fact that we had a wilderness PvP system that people enjoyed, and there was a whole market economy around that. But at the same time, it was really nerve-wracking going in to try and do these clues, hoping you didn't get killed, going to level 50-plus wilderness. I remember the old run of taking the lever in Ardoyan to that, to that little peninsula, running through, slashing the spider web, going to do your coordinate clue, and then running back to either that lever or slashing the other spider webs to go to the bank under that little wizard
mage training,
mage training arena. Yeah. So and you know that was that was nerve wracking because there were PvPers around, but at the same time, it's something that. We miss, because I don't think anything has ever brought PvP back. And going back to the survey, it's really disheartening to not see that there was really much about PvP on there, right?
You might not believe this, but I used to have a PvP in Pure way back when.
What?
Yeah, I used to have one
in
with
ours
a friend.
Too?
Yeah, yeah. So we would have names that were almost the same to confuse players.
Did they have zeros and O's in them?
Yeah, exactly. So one of us would attack the target.
I never imagined you'd be one of those idiots.
And then I was young, okay? And then they will attack the other players, but they will get schooled because it's not a retaliation. So they would drop everything. That was the strategy. I'm not making this up. I had a pure, and we trained it.
You
to
were
be like
a
low combat. Yeah, I didn't do it much, and I didn't like it much, but it was the thing I did with friends, so. But, like, this was back in the day when North of Varrok, if you entered the wilderness, it would
Oh, yeah, it's a bloodbath.
It was, like, everybody was standing there next to the wilderness ditch, it was back then. It wasn't a wall, it was, like, the moat.
After the ditch, not before.
Yeah.
Do you remember before the ditch?
It might have been before as well, but I know everybody was like on the edge, and at some point people would like run past and in and instantly be chased, and it was majestic. It's not my thing. I'm not sure if I would like it now, but it felt like an MMO, and it doesn't really always feel like that these days. Like, there wasn't consequence of there being other players at that time.
Wow.
You would have to sort of like take like secret routes into the wilderness to not get past these cracks.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, like I would go all the way east and like near the Earth Altar, run into the wilderness and then horizontally across. And yeah, I remember that.
Oh boy.
Those were good times.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sunset Fish. I just learned something about Sirion that I never knew.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that we both go back to the wilderness in those old days on that. You know, for me, I have to throw this one in. And I can say this now that Tanis isn't here. I miss the XP rates of RuneScape Classic.
I'm not sure if I do, but I can see where you're coming from. Things are very easy. The game is very much focused on getting to max level and doing things from there.
Yeah.
And back in the day, it was really about the journey. It was super exciting to get like quest requirements.
And more on the journey and getting to a max level in what have we been doing. But... Alrighty, thank you both of you for your questions. Really good questions, really simple questions, yet striking to the core of what's important with RuneScape. So if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a DM on Twitter or @mention us @rsbnb. All right, tech news time.
Woo!
Apple's fired hundreds of contractors that it hired to review Siri recordings. It canceled the contract.
Shouldn't have done that then, right?
It canceled the contracts of at least 300 people in its European headquarters based in Cork, Ireland. And this is after it emerged earlier in the month that the contractors sometimes heard sensitive information, such as Siri users' confidential medical details and people having sex. The workers reviewed a sample of recordings less than 0.2% to make sure the voice assistant was working correctly as a part of a process called grading. The workers were sent home on the same day it halted the program, and last week it reportedly told contracting firms that it's ending their grading work.
You know, it kind of makes me feel sad, right?
Yeah, it does, because these people were employed with a good company, earning a good wage, but changing dynamics and the fact something got out has cost them their jobs.
Like, let's put aside the question on whether the listening was ethical or not. I think it has been discussed on the show before.
Yeah, it has.
So, like, let's look, like, there's this sort of media fad about this recording listening thing that started with one person and just rolled out to basically every company does it. Honestly, he was surprised about it. Like, that's kind of how things work. So I guess it's mostly...
If you want magical technological features, there has to be something happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not sure if anybody's ever surprised, but then again, was anybody really surprised when the Cambridge Analytica thing on Facebook came out, right? Yeah. So it's one of these things. And then because it gets so much attention and becomes so big, people lose their jobs. And I think that's kind of sad.
Yeah, like, that is. It really
what
is.
What else can you do as Apple? They didn't really have a choice. Like, how are you going to sell, keep doing this in the current...
Right. And you can't necessarily move that many people around, especially if they're based in Ireland.
These are probably contractors. They... Yeah, like, no offense to these people, but you don't really need very specific skills to be good at this. So, you know, there's just no place for these people in the company, and they get fired. And it's really sad. Yeah, I don't really want to go into, like, the blame game on this.
Yeah. Do you think we've seen the end of everybody talking about their virtual assistants listening to people?
Oh, no. The EU is going to probably barge in and be like, hey, we should probably do an antitrust investigation into...
Oh, boy.
This.
Oh, boy.
I mean, they tend to do that.
Yeah, they do.
Like,
and whether or not it's
more
needed is another question, of course.
I think... Like, it's a serious concern.
Uh-huh.
But I also think it wasn't... I can't think of the word. But people are also thinking, like, blowing this up and seeing this out of context. Like, yeah, people are going to be listening to conversations. And most companies are actually relatively honest about it in their terms and conditions. So... Now, let's just accept that and move on. Like, I don't feel this is the topic we need to have a societal conversation about.
No, there's far better things to have that chat about.
And
you're right. It is the media that has largely been blowing these things up too. And we just talked about this because you're right. We did talk about the ethical side, but we just talked about it this week because this is one of the cases where there have been ramifications by this, and it's never good when people lose their jobs. So, All right, next piece of tech news. Google is reportedly looking to move production of its Pixel smartphone out of China and into Vietnam starting for the 2020 model run. Push. And, you know, the idea behind this is because labor costs in China are rising along with added pressure due to the tariffs and trade war going on between the U.S. and China. And Google has already taken the step of moving the Pixel 3a phone's production out of China, as well as its smart Google Home home speaker device too. And with this, Google says they're going to ship between 8 and 10 million smartphones this year, which is double from last year. And with this, Vietnam becomes a key part of Google's search for where they look in terms of things to grow forward with the smartphone business. And, you know, with this, they also mentioned that the speakers will likely move to Thailand. But this is one of the big countries, or rather one of the big companies, moving one of their businesses out of China based on recent trends that have been happening. And I think it's fair to say that the Pixel is a flagship phone, and there's definitely people out there who will take note of this. And because of this, the Pixel would become a more attractive option, I think. And I think the ball is in Apple's court next to see whether they can continue absorbing this cost or if they're going to move out of China as well for their supply chains. So it's definitely an interesting market dynamic.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also, it's going to keep happening. Like the labor costs in China, it's a valid thing. Like China isn't the lower class, like the middle class in China is massive. And those are not factory workers.
That's right.
So like, nope. You see a lot of like what we did, like I say we, like what Europe and you know America did with Asia. Asia is now doing with Africa, right? Africa is becoming like how I have it seen being described is Africa is China's China. Like Africa has really low labor costs, and we like Europe invested a lot of money in China and the infrastructure there to get all the factories up and working there, and now China's doing the same to Africa. So we sort of see this all moving around, and I think we will see a shift in these things, like where things are being produced over the next few years, because you know China has grown beyond that. Like it has a big tech scene by itself now. It has big companies that we are not necessarily super familiar with, such as like Alibaba and WeChat, yep, which are massive. Like they are probably bigger than most companies we are familiar with because China is really big. Like we don't often appreciate, I think, how many people there are in China. And if you're a product that only appeals to Chinese, you still have a sixth or a seventh of the world population,
yeah,
as your
yeah
audience. So yeah, that's
and
you do pretty
that's
well there.
To sneeze at.
Yeah. No, like Chinese people are super technically literate as well, right? Like most people know how to use a mobile phone way better than people in Europe do. Like older people as well. The Chinese culture is almost completely cashless. It's you'd think it uses cards. No, they don't use cards. They use their phone. They use WePay, which is part of WeChat, to pay stuff. That's like it's a whole different culture, and they are.
And a lot of that is also
faster.
Set up because they have the centralized government, and because a walled ecosystem, a walled garden, so to speak, they can move faster
sure
on pretty much everything.
Yeah, but like they are moving faster than the current Western world ever did. So yeah, dynamics are changing really quickly, and I think companies like Google with their smartphone production are catching up on that and making changes. And I think this is also fueling the dynamics, trade dynamics outside of the tech world over the past year that we've seen, and definitely something to keep an eye on. And I think there's concern in each of the tech companies about where things are going next, because
yeah,
hard to predict.
And you can't just pick up and move a supply chain in 6 months. It's going to be something that's going to take probably 3 to 5 years to execute.
Oh, yeah. Like a lot of mobile stuff. Like we, it's a really funny discussion. Like you always get like, oh, like Samsung stole Apple's new feature. And it doesn't really work that way because the cycle to make a new device is actually much longer than
yeah
what we see. Like we only really see the last few months.
The 2020 devices are already finalized. 2021 is being worked on now, and 2022
yeah, exactly
is going into R&D. So that's the cycles we're talking about here.
Precisely. So that's sort of like why, yeah, you're right. These things take years. Like we're talking years on the time scale here, not a few months.
All right. Final piece of tech news. Valve to fight EU antitrust charges. And five video game publishers are settling with this one. And this is an interesting one for you because you're in the EU and you published a video game on Steam. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, so if I remember correctly, we actually launched to Steam closely after they did some price discrimination. Or maybe I was involved in the Steam ecosystem, so it was either before or after, like a few months either direction from our launch. A lot of people would buy games in Russia in the Russian store. But because market, people don't earn as much in Russia as they do in, say, the United Kingdom.
Right.
So prices for games are generally lower. Like, it's not just a currency exchange rate. The market value is actually, lower. It's all, it's about buyer power of the users. It's sort of scaled to that. So people from, Western countries would go to the Russian store, get cheap versions of the game, and then resell them for slightly under their Western store prices in third-party stores. And of course, that's a big hit to income for developers because they're only seeing the low prices, while for the Kingdom, you really want to ask for the full 100%. Now, as far as I understand, what Steam did to prevent it is that countries that sell games at lower prices, games sold in those countries cannot trade the games to users outside of those countries.
Right, and one of those things they did was geo-blocking activation keys.
Exactly. And that is now what the EU is saying that's not allowed. It's an interesting case. Because I can see the point for that. We're both not fans of geo-blocking, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
You're not a fan either.
Yeah.
That being said, it is a real problem. You can't really keep the loophole open either.
And you can't bring the Russian market up just as an example to create parity with everyone else.
Exactly. That doesn't work either. It's going to be really interesting to see... If you think about it, Valve made the right calls based on values, and I can't really think
of... And protecting developers.
Yeah, they protected developer interests, and I don't really know how else they can do it. This is probably the most user-friendly option there is as well.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, will they be successful in this? Because this is a pretty big deal when you're looking at different countries. And if the EU breaks this open, this will be another one of the cases we had on the show where the EU is trying to do good but ends up doing harm in the process. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was a few months back. But it was another EU case like this. Do you think this will be successful and go ahead? Do you think the EU will be successful in this?
It's hard to see. We have seen several decisions of the EU, and we have seen appeals, and we haven't seen any of the outcomes of the appeals. So it's hard to estimate what the success chance is. It's hard because the EU decides. It's a different committee in the EU, but it's going to be the EU that decides. So, I don't think they'll be successful. I think the EU will push this through. But it will be really interesting to see what the I'm hoping that there's a conversation between the EU and Valve to come to a solution that's acceptable to both.
Yeah, it's better to have a solution that's acceptable to both rather than have one rammed down the throat of the other. So
yeah.
Alrighty, well, that's it for tech news. Wrapping up the show this week, we'll talk about the crafting skill of the month. It was a very interesting competition. We had a race going on. We had seven competitors in this one. At the end, Unknown Raptoid claimed first with 22.7 million crafting XP gained. Jam Andy 52 wasn't far behind with 21.7, with a huge spike in the last day. So congratulations to you, Unknown Raptoid, and good job everybody else for competing in the Skill of the Month. We'll have next month's competitions to announce next week on the show. So congratulations on that one. And, you know, just as a recap, the previous competition this month was farming, which JamAndy52 won with 11.7 million farming XP gained as well. All right, so doing some achievements of the week right now. So starting off, we have Always Nub with 99 Farming on August 29th, Zach Master with 99 Thieving on August 28th, Minority with 99 Magic also on the 28th, 123 Light 50 got 99 Slayer on the 27th, Whiskey Panko got 99 Mining on August 27th, and Pouncing got 99 Dungeoneering on August 26th.
Moving on to the 25th of August, we have three 99s. We have 99 Divination from Zach Master, 99 Mining from Curtis, or Kurt1is, and 99 Farming from Superchair 2. Then Minority got 99 Fishing and 99 Invention on August 24. And finally, Princess Ely got 99 Farming on August 22. Alex Peaks got 99 Defense on August 22. And K-Matt-Made 22 got 99 Runecrafting on August 22.
Lots of 22s well done there.
Yeah, lots of 22s.
Okay. So, it's pick of the week time, but I just want to get everybody in their seats, and I just want to brace everybody for the what have we been doing section. It's going to be a shocking one. But let's do the pick of the week first. So, what do we got?
So, I have got a game this time. It's Divinity Original Sin, of which there are various editions, and there's a sequel as well. I recommend the entire sort of series. There's enhanced edition of both games, which I recommend you play. So, what is Divinity Original Sin? It's a it's an RPG with turn-based combat, which I find one of the best combat systems I've ever played with. It's turn-based, but you play on a battle map, so it's like a normal 3D environment. You get a certain number of points each turn that you can use to use abilities. Now, the cool thing is there's a lot of complexity in combat. Like, being on a higher area means you have a larger range and you're harder to hit.
Sure.
If fire comes in contact with oil, you get boom. You can do a lot of stuff with, like, different elements and how they interact. There's a lot of complexity, and it is the closest to the freedom and awesomeness you get in combat in tabletop RPGs.
Okay.
Because in a tabletop RPG, you can say, I do this, what happens? You don't just smash people, you try and be and use your environment and be smart and all that stuff. And Divinity does that really well, and that's what I really like about it. Like, the combat is really exciting, and if you go on a higher difficulty, it's actually hard as well. Like, the AI is not always smart, but, like, it's pretty decent, and you really have to smartly budget and think about it. So if you like a tactician side of things, you can really go tactical and strategize and think a lot of times, because there's no time limits. If you're more into, like, enjoying the story, which is also great, you can go at lower difficulty and sort of go to it. And yeah, the story is great. There is, in the first game, I played it co-op, so both games support co-op. 100 hours of content easily.
Holy.
And I enjoyed every single hour.
And that's not something you get in most games these days. And how much is this?
The original game right now is on Steam for £30.
Okay. So a feature game price then.
It is a feature game, but I don't really finish a lot of RPGs. Like, I usually get bored, and I played this 100 hours, which for a game like this, for me, is impressive. But, you know, there's so much content, there's a lot of side quests, there's always something to do. There is the humor is great. If you love RuneScape humor, this is actually quite similar. It's very British as well. Everything is voice acted as well.
Oh,
every
nice.
Single line of text is voice acting.
Janice would like that.
It is... You can play different classes, different races, different characters. There's so many options. Replay value. It's such a good deal, and I definitely recommend playing this with a friend. Divinity Original Sin has a two-player co-op. Original Sin 2, which is also £30, has four-player co-op. And even more customization options. They have separate stories, so you can... They are in the same universe, but you can play the second one independently of the first one. But yeah, it's hard to explain, but it is really, really good games and RPGs. And especially if you're into the turn-based stuff with lots of options. Yeah, go for it. Like I said, is the closest to what you can get with to tabletop RPGs in a game. There's so many options, there's so many conversation branches as well. There's always ways to go to fight your way out of a situation or to talk your way out of a situation.
Nice.
And the way you talk yourself out of a situation is dependent on your character background, your abilities, your... Like, the conversation trees are massive and it's all voice acted. You have no idea how they did it, but they did. And both of these games were Kickstarted as well, so...
All right.
Yeah, there you have it.
DivinityOriginalSin.com. Is it also available on Steam?
Yes. Okay. So one and two are both on Steam. They have definitive editions, so they're sort of remasters, reworked. Yeah, definitely suggest playing those rather than the original versions, but that's the default anyway.
Alrighty.
And these are also, for the people who are in the RPG genre, by the way, the same creators as Baldur's Gate, which is
very famous. I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, same studio.
Just scrolling through the website here, looking at a picture, it shows that you can use your environment, and the one example they give is electrified water. Nice.
Yeah, I ran into that a lot. Accidentally, which is funny when you play co-op. Like, oops, I stunned you.
That
happens a lot.
DivinityOriginalSin.com. Yeah. All right. What have you been up to in RS?
Well, I've finally been doing the player-owned farm the last 2 weeks, and it has been going pretty well. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. I have that up and going. Just today, I learned I've been an idiot. I thought the best growth stage to sell animals was adult.
Oh.
That's not right. You only get 85% of the beans there.
It's adolescent.
It's adolescent. I found out because I got babysitters, and they were like, we won't grow past adolescent. I'm like, but then I don't get the best beans. So I decided to double check. That's how you get the best beans. So yeah, that was really stupid. Luckily I caught it though, so going forward I'll get more beans. But yeah, I'm working on that. Meanwhile, I'm also still working on my own set of Masterwork armor. I'm doing it completely the Iron Man way, so I have mined all the ore. I have not even used miscellanea or anything. It's all hand mined. And that's now all being smelted slowly into bars. I'm working on that right now. And after that, the folding begins.
That's the stage that's the most painful.
Also the most AFKable, I am hoping. So that's going to be lots of catch-up on YouTube during that time.
Oh, good. All right. Well, as for me this week, I had a really good... I had a really good string of luck at the Big Game Hunter Dinosaurs, as I mentioned previously, because I was at kill 90 and I got a totem, and then I got another kill at 94. So that was it for that in terms of getting the totems from Big Game Hunter. Following that, I went over to the butterflies because I needed something AFK to do, and lo and behold, I get the compacted hides. So hunting wise, I'm pretty much done with Anachronia, unless I decide to go back and do some Big Game Hunter for the rewards and whatnot on it. So I got tier 3 Hunter on my base camp, so that's all nice and peachy. But as I mentioned in the earlier part of the show, and I mentioned this to a few people this week, I have a bit of an announcement and a bit of a reveal for this week on the podcast. So you guys remember the Breaking the Storm event, right? Back in June.
Yep.
Back then, and knowing that the player-owned farm was there and seeing free construction XP, I made the decision to purchase the Summer Escape membership with Bonds on an alternate character that I set up previous years ago to test one of the tutorial island incarnations of it and whatnot. I don't know when it was set up, but it was from that. So from Breaking the Storm, one weekend worth there, I got 60 construction for free. And I wanted 60 construction because that's what you need to unlock all the pens at the player-owned farm. I also took the character up to 28 farming with that event as well. And following that, in the 2 months, I have been doing the player-owned farm daily on this alt character. And it is currently 94 farming within reach of level 95 in 2 months. And I have a grand total of 32 hours played on the account.
That's more broken than Hunter, if you ask me.
Yeah. I started this project because I wanted to see what the experience was like farming at the player-owned farm. I also started it because, you know, I got farming as my first 99, and I never got the chance to keep Saken on trimmed farming cape. And I also wanted to see that, you know, what's it like in 2019 doing the challenge of running a level 3 skiller? Because that's what this is. There's no combat levels on this one except for one accidental summoning level. It's still level 3. And that also provides more of a challenge, I think, than Iron Man does. Now, I have a full Informer article detailing this at informer.rsbnb.com. But I want everybody to think, if you can take farming to 30 to 99 in 2 months, how did that piece of content get into the game as it is? And you can see why it's being nerfed down, or rather rebalanced to it. And, you know, this led me to a number of questions with this, you know? Like, for example, and, you know, this is something that I've wanted to ask the question of, is that, you know, aside from looking at how fast this was and how little engagement there was, is that, you know, would it have been more rewarding, for example, to make a push for Song of the Elves on Old School? Or a better question is, how fast should RuneScape be in 2019? And if it's going to be fast, and if there's going to be an XP endgame, we need a way to handle XP beyond 120 and preventing 200 mils from appearing. So that's what I've learned all through this. And, you know, this entire project was supposed to be fun. And, you know, I've had times of fun. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it until I get the 99 on it. But it doesn't feel as nearly as rewarding as the old style of farming. So that's where I'm at currently with this. I'm going to be continuing it to 99 farming. It's unlikely that I'll continue it beyond, unless I can find some way of cycling 2 bonds a month towards it to pay for its membership. And, you know, it's also worth noting, I didn't take any handouts at the beginning from this character. The only handouts from the main account were the materials to build the pens, two chinchampas, 2 spiders, 2 zygomites, 2 yaks, and 2 dragons. And with that, I've been able to get very close, a pinch away from 95 farming in 2 months. And that's something that has utterly astounded me, and I'm not quite sure how to feel about it. Long pause. Long pause.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything I can say about this.
So you can read the Informer article at informer.rsbnb.com. And, I mean, it's not the feeling I was expecting to have with this. I was expecting to be pleased as I got into the 90s and beyond, but that's not the feeling I've had. So It's been a little bit sobering, to say the least. And I don't feel as bad, though, because, I mean, I've just been spending 5 minutes a day, really, logging in, clicking a few buttons at the farm, and logging out.
Hmm.
So, maybe that's why. But at the same time, it's good I didn't sink that much time into it. But I will be providing updates on this as we progress forward, and this has been a little secret project that I've been working on since the end of June. And I think only 4 people actually know about it this time. You, Tannis, Mike, and Earth. So, there we have it. I don't think we get much more revealing than that and what have we been doing.
No, I think what I used to say on a big UK car show is and on that bombshell.
And on that bombshell, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. So if you guys, of course, want to join us in-game, we're at French Chat Bits Bytes. You can subscribe to the podcast at any number of podcast listeners out there. Head to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe to learn and figure out how to do that. And we'll be back next week with another episode of RSBNB Update. So with that being said, take care, everyone.
See ya.